next and last stop is
Atlantic Avenue, Barclays Center.
Stand clear of the closing doors, please.
Boomer and Geo on the Fan. A lot of Nets podcasts.
I mean, the only Net fans you know? The only what? The only Nets fans you know?
At least they've got some self-aware.
Man. I mean, come on, man. Or are these guys?
Welcome back to the Only Net Fans You Know podcast. I'm Peter. Charlie is still on vacation, but I have a very special guest and a great show lined up for us. I'm just going to get straight into it. Our guest today runs one of the biggest Nets accounts on Instagram with over 19K followers. His podcast, The Nets Press Experience, just had Spencer Dinwiddie on a couple weeks ago. Welcome to the show, future NBA Executive of the Year, Dylan from Nets Press IG. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, brother? Thank you for having me. This week has been crazy, man. So I'm looking forward to everything that's going to unfold over the next couple of weeks. Like you mentioned, Media Day, training camp. These are all starting up, preseasons in a couple of weeks. So Nets basketball is back. I can't wait.
Yeah, well, we just got to jump straight into the Dame trade. Not going to the Miami Heat like everybody thought. Not going to the 76ers like I predicted. Instead, he goes to Milwaukee.
A three-team trade that brings Lillard to the Bucks. Portland got a tremendous haul back, including DeAndre Ayton from the Phoenix Suns, Drew Holiday from the Bucks, an unprotected 2029 Milwaukee first-round pick, and a couple of unprotected pick swaps. Yusuf Nurkic, Grayson Allen, Nasir Little, Keon Johnson, they go to a Suns team.
There's a lot to dissect over here.
Yeah, so I mean, when I first saw the details of the trade, I thought the Trailblazers got absolutely fleeced. And I was even talking with one of my coworkers. I was saying, I think the Suns actually won that deal for a small point of time. And the only reason was because you saw the moves that they made this offseason acquiring Bradley Beal. They had no depth. Like, Yuta Watanabe was one of their best role players. And I love Yuta. That's a Nets legend right there. But you don't want him being, you know, your sixth, seventh man. So the fact that they were able to add Grace now and a great 3-and-D player, he can get into, you know, people's heads. And out West, he's going to do great. You know, they added a few other pieces as well. I know that there's talks that they're waving Keon Johnson and Ish Wainwright here in a couple of days, potentially. But the pieces that they got, it really forms their bench and their depth very well. So I thought the Suns did great in that deal. Nurkic, of course, going along there as well. Fits the style that they kind of need. They have three scorers already, so they need some guy to kind of just stand and bang down low. He can stretch the floor as well, so that was a very nice pickup for them as well. From Portland's perspective, getting Ayton, I think that's a great move for them. Ayton was somebody that was really underappreciated in Phoenix. And, you know, I think he can really blossom into what he was supposed to be. You know, he was a former top five pick. So that's somebody that's really going to blossom over there. Drew Holiday definitely was shocked that he was sent in that move as well. But it makes sense why Portland kind of waited for the right deal. I think Drew Holiday has an exceptional trade value compared to Tyler Hero at this point in time. So it made sense for them to want to, you know, gain somebody that they could flip for something more, especially because they don't need Hero if they have Anthony, Scoot, and Sharp. And then, of course, Milwaukee getting Dame. I think that's, like everybody's been saying, it's one of the scariest moves we've seen in a very long time, but it's also a very dangerous move because Milwaukee's been built a lot on team play and defense. And Dame's a very individual player when it comes to his offensive ability. Not really that great of a defender, but what he brings you is, you know, 28 plus a game on efficient shooting. So I think that's something that is really going to benefit them well, especially, you know, their series this year with Miami. Their main issue was scoring. So I think that's definitely something that's going to elevate them to the next level.
But think about this. Rudy Gobert got traded for how many first-round picks? And for Damian Lillard, they only got, what, one pick and two swaps? That's insane. Yeah.
Definitely.
How does that happen?
That's where I said originally when this deal happened that Portland got fleeced. Because how do you get a singular unprotected pick with two swaps only? But when you're looking at the trade now, Milwaukee, Giannis is not going to be there. in 2028. I can almost guarantee that. Dame's going to be retired. Chris Middleton's going to be retired. Brook Lopez is going to be retired. That team's going nowhere. So they've got this five-year window where they could potentially do something. Giannis may not even stay after these 2 years of his contract. So those three picks, I guess you can say, the one is guaranteed. The other two, though, I mean, I could see Portland being, you know, a top four seed in the West in 5 years. You know, so those swaps are going to come in handy, and especially having three back-to-back-to-back years of potential top 10 picks now, that's something that is seriously not being recognized enough, even on my part when the trade like originally happened. So the fact that they got those three picks now, you know that they're going to swap them. They're not going to be bad picks at the time. Milwaukee's not a big market. They have Giannis now, but once he leaves, it's over for a little bit. So, you know, they have those three picks, and whatever they flip for Drew, I think that they've put themselves in a great position, especially if they're going to tank this year and be a top five pick again. They can go on with somebody like Ron Holland. So I think their future is very bright.
All of a sudden, after the trade, we see a Chris Haynes article talking about, oh, if he couldn't go to Miami, him and his agent talked about other destinations, Brooklyn being one of them. Mm-hmm. Do you feel the Nets should have been even invested in this? And of course, there was a Tyler Hero dropping dimes, you know, a rumor of three first round picks plus Dorian Finney-Smith for Hero, which I'm sorry, I'm just getting into the dropping dimes thing. I see he's right sometimes, but you go back, he just said like a week ago that Dame going to Miami was done. So yeah. do you put stock in that? And do you think the Nets should have been in this?
The dropping dimes things, I'm actually bought into it. The guy that deactivates the account and comes in and predicts all these things, he's been great. He definitely didn't predict this one, but you know, he's been on the ball this entire summer. So when it comes to the Nets and Dame, though, I'm not sure if you saw the post that I had. When Dame originally sat out the last 10 games of the season, I posted something, and it was like Dame to Brooklyn. And it was of him smiling. I think it was in a Nets jersey as well. But I was invested with Dame coming to Brooklyn originally. I felt that we were one piece away, especially with, you know, Philly series. We were in close games constantly. We were able to hold Embiid to under 25 a game. So that was something that I was originally thinking would be a great idea. Kind of looking into it a little bit more throughout the summer, noticing that, you know, his contract, he's making $60 million at 37 years old. He is 33, turning 34 this year. It definitely didn't seem like the right fit. So I was happy that we didn't go out of our way to, you know, buy in on another 32-year-old plus guy. We really didn't want a Paul Pierce 2.0 this thing with Boston. So I'm happy that we didn't do it. But I definitely would have liked to have been a facilitator of the deal. I think Tyler Hero complements Ben Simmons perfectly. For three first-round picks, though, definitely not.
Yeah, you know what bothered me about Tyler Hero? This guy's 24 years old. He's put up 20 points, I think, the last 2 years in a row, 38% mm-hmm. shooting from three. You know, his contract is a little, you know, right now is not the best, but the cap is going to be going up in the next couple of years. And I think it's going to look a lot better when we add, you know, some time, and hindsight is 2020. But why is Miami so, like, willing to give him up? Like, yes, they'd be getting Dame, right? But, like, there's something that bothers me about Hero's game that I'm just not comfortable with, and I'm not sure what it is.
See, for me, Hero, he definitely can't be a first option. I definitely agree with, you know, him not being the guy. But when you put him around potentially Ben Simmons, Mikal Bridges, Claxton, this is a guy that we've seen put up games that are spectacular. He had a game where he put up 39, 9, and 8 with 5+ threes. He's everything that you need. He can play make, he can score. And the thing about his contract too that people don't realize is Mikal Bridges was a guy that was putting up 16 points a game in Phoenix, making $24 million. Hero's over there in Miami putting up 20+ a game and, you know, winning six mans of the year and still making roughly $24 to $27 million. So the contract isn't really that bad if you look at it based on a statistical and, you know, an individual aspect. But I could definitely see where people kind of are overvaluing him, but I do believe teams are undervaluing him because if this was an individual straight up trade, he's worth two first round picks. I think that's very safe to say, because when you look at some of the players that have gotten moved in this league, Dorian Finney-Smith last year, we got offered 2-3 first round picks for. Mikal was offered 4 or 5 first round picks. So when you're really looking at trade values, I think Hero is somebody that is definitely going to build it up this year, especially now that they don't have Dame. He's going to go out there and try and kill, and he's going to try and get out of there So I was in the midst of a phone call, and one of my coworkers came running over because we're big basketball guys, and he was like, "Dude, Dame just got fucking traded to the Bucks," and I was like, that was the last thing I expected. I mean, people that follow me, they understand that I've never been a big Bucks guy, especially after the 21 series. So my heart sunk when I found that out. That's probably one of the biggest trades over the past 5 years, without a doubt. So that was definitely unpredictable.
I think we touched up on it. I'm happy that we're just done with talking about Damian Lillard. We're going to go to the press conference that came out this week. We had a couple of Nets doing some podcasts. I know I don't think you caught all the podcasts, but that's okay. I'm just going to do a quick rundown of it. We had Spencer Dinwiddie, who's also my favorite player. And I actually have a big issue with you, but we're going to talk about that later.
Okay, I have a feeling I know where this is going.
Spencer Dinwiddie was on the Pat Bev podcast. Same usual Spencer stuff, giving some insight, excited for the year, talking about Ben, throwing some positive energy his way. Usual stuff. We had CJ was with JJ Redick. There was an interesting clip that came out about his shooting form, JJ Redick's shooting form and whatnot. And I can't lie, I learned a lot more about Cameron Johnson. He's a lot more detailed than I thought he was. Shame on me for not doing my homework and whatnot and getting to know a guy who's going to be a top three option on my team. Did you check out the press conference at all?
So I got to see clips and pieces of it. So it's definitely been a little tough to keep up on some of the topics, but I did see the breakdown that CJ gave with Redick about, you know, coming off of screens and fading away from three, kind of the shot detail that he put into it with the shoulders and lining up towards the basket in this way. Like, there was a lot of detail. You could tell that he really sits there and studies the game. And that's something that I didn't know either. I you know, think of him as a role player, but we just pay this guy, you know, damn near $25 million a year. I think it's time for us to expect a big leap from him.
I think there's going to be a lot of competition in this training camp. I think we kind of know what the starting lineup is going to be. There is a competition at shooting guard, I guess. I guess you could say power forward, but not really. I think shooting guard is where everyone is kind of butting heads, and you're going to have a couple people thinking maybe CT should start there. Maybe Dinwiddie should start there. There's just so many like things that we could do. Bridges might start there, and maybe you add somebody else a little bigger, add a little more size at power forward, adding Dorian Finney-Smith as the power forward. I really don't know. But what do you think the starting lineup should be?
It's a little tough to say, really. That's why I was really banking on Brooklyn being a facilitator for Hero, because I really feel like he was the perfect fit to put alongside Ben. He would be a guy that can give you 22 plus a game, playmake as well. But if I'm really looking at the roster as of right now, it's going to come down to Spence and CT, like you said, for the shooting guard position. I personally don't think with having Ben and Claxton on the floor, you could put Finney-Smith out there right away as a starter. And the only reason I say it is because the guy is a career 38-plus percent shooter from three. The last season was a tough year for him, and he is coming off of a wrist surgery. So I want to make sure that he's all right from the shooting aspect. I definitely think if he can crack those stats that he used to in Dallas, he should be the starter. But for now, I think having CJ as the starting power forward with McCall at small forward, you're going to have to figure out the shooting guard. And personally, to me, I would on the safe side say Spence. If you've been following me for a while, I know a lot of people on Twitter don't like me for my opinions, but I'm not a big believer in Cam Thomas. And the only reason for it is because he's very immature in the aspect that he doesn't really like to do anything outside of scoring. It's great to score, but you also got to be a team player as well. So when you're a liability on defense, when you're taking shots away from other players, when you're bitching and moaning about minutes as a second year, 20-year-old, it's not really my style of play. So I definitely think Spence should get the start over him for now. He's got a lot to prove. You know, the games that he did put up 40, he did it when McCall wasn't playing, when CJ wasn't playing, when Spence wasn't playing. He didn't play with starters. So anybody in this league can put up 30 plus. That's my personal opinion, though. I mean, we watched Sadiq Bey put up 50 2 years ago. So I definitely don't think that he's at that level to where he can start just yet. I think we need to see a little bit of growth with him getting, 20 to 22 minutes off the bench, seeing what he can do playing alongside somebody like McCall. I want to see him play make a little bit more throughout the pick and roll with Clax. So there's definitely a lot of room for improvement for him that I think hasn't been reached just yet for him to be a full-time starter.
I'm actually a little disappointed here. I thought you were going to go for Cam Thomas here, and I was going to have an argument with you about it. But I definitely agree that Spencer Dinwiddie should be the shooting guard, at least going into the season. Cam Thomas will have plenty of shots. I have arguments with people on Twitter all the time. Why not put Cam Thomas in there? But you're not thinking about having Cam Thomas in there. He's going to be taking shots away from a guy you just paid in Cameron Johnson. He's going to be taking shots away from Bridges. He's going to be taking the ball out of Ben Simmons' hands. Why not put Cameron Thomas with the second unit and let him just go off? Let's see. Let's see those 40-point explosions on a more efficient level. Let's see him handle the ball. Let's see him create for somebody else. Let's see if he could do this. He wants a chance, and I definitely think the guy deserves a chance. There's some – I don't know what the animosity is. Again, I don't know if it's immaturity. There's been a couple of times he's been asked after a game, what do you think you'd do better? And he'll go, nothing. Nothing. And it's just – it's kind of sad to see that in a way. I don't want to put the guy down for saying how he feels. The lineup that we're going to have at the beginning of the year – might be totally different when we get to the All-Star break, when we get to the trade deadline. It's been different every year. Yeah, Spencer Dinwiddie's going to be gone. Spencer Dinwiddie's my favorite player, and fuck you for having him on your podcast, because I've been doing this and I've been wanting him on, so fuck you. But I think he's gone. He's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. The Nets don't have the space for him. They can re-sign him using bird rights, but this is the issue. If you re-sign him, that almost guarantees you're not going to re-sign Clax, who's probably going to determine this year if he's going to be a max player or not. He's a lot closer to a max player right now than not. Analytics love him. I don't know how you feel about him, but what would you do? Are you going to re-sign Spence and lose Clax?
So there's a few things that I got to touch up on here. I've always said it. I think it's great if you can score 40 points, but at the same time, you need to win. And the bottom line is he's 1-3 when he's put up 40 plus. So I points are cool. If you want to go out and score 100, that's sick. But if you don't win, it's meaningless. So to me, he's got to figure out ways to do that with starters. He's got to figure out ways to contribute with his team as well. And he also needs to figure out ways to win. So I definitely don't think he's proven anything yet when it comes to his scoring ability. Like I said, Sadiq Bey put up 50 2 years ago. He's on the Pistons. You know, anybody can score 40 points when you aren't playing with starters when your G League team is in. So
I think a lot of people forget that.
Yeah. A lot of people like to use the example, oh, well, he's scoring over Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Well, yeah, because this isn't a guy that you go out of your way to study and game plan around. Right. So of course you're going to let him shoot. And I'm not taking away some of the tough skilled shots that he takes. But again, you can put up 40 on any given night if you're the only guy out there taking 25 plus shots. You have to remember, too, all the games where he had 40-plus, he took over 20 shots. And I want to say he took over 5 threes. So, you know, this is a guy that is shooting volume. I expect you to make it. You're an NBA player. If you're not shooting 45% from the field and at least 35% from three, then you're doing too much. But, I know that, you know, you were saying you were going to come at me with the Spence stuff. I know that I'm one of the people that always puts him in the trade machine just because – It's not a personal thing. I love Spence. Spence is one of the guys that for years prior to the KD Kyrie era that I was a big fan of. I think he was somebody that was truly an all-around player. He's 6'5" at the guard position. He can play make. He can defend pretty well. And he shoots very well. So there was really no hatred towards him whatsoever. The reason why he's in all of my trades, it's a salary filler. He's on a $20 million expiring contract. And like you said, you don't expect him to be here by the trade deadline, sadly. If he came back for $10 million, I would love him. But, you know, at the end of the day, you got to go get your money as well. And if the right package comes up where we can get somebody along the lines of an Anthony Simons, a Donovan Mitchell, you know, those are people that I'm willing to jump on. So there's definitely no hatred towards Spence. I love Spence. And he was super cool to talk to. He's a down-to-earth guy.
We have to get Clax.
Yeah. So that's another thing that scares me, though. I'm really hoping that we do something similar to what we did with Cam Johnson, where we sign him immediately. But there is definitely a high risk, I personally feel, of him leaving. And if we don't feel like we can re-sign him by the trade deadline, that's something that has to be looked into. Because you don't want to lose a guy that's a Defensive Player of the Year caliber player. Which, by the way, I know that I rant about this on everything that I go on. how the fuck was that guy not put on all defensive second team at least? How was Evan Mobley, Bam Adebayo, Draymond Green over him on that and over him on defensive player of the year? The media absolutely screwed him over after the Kyrie and KD trade. There was no dip in his game other than the fact that he was tired from playing minutes, but the stats were still there. His offensive ability even grew during the first few games that they were traded. He was putting up 18 and 12, 25 and 13. Like, he was putting up numbers. So yeah, that was something that really pissed me off. But it's also a blessing in disguise, because if, say, that happens again this year, the price tag on him is going to be a lot cheaper. If he makes an all-defensive team, if he makes an all-star game, if he wins DPOY, that's already kind of going into that max contract situation. So I'm not hoping that he doesn't, but at the same time, for our cap salary's sake, I kind of am. Because if we can get him back for, you know, 20 to 24 million a year, similar to what Mikal's contract is, that's something that you jump on immediately. You give him a no trade clause. I don't give a shit what you have to do to him. Just get him back. So it's definitely going to be an interesting few months.
We don't have a legitimate backup center still. Like, I guess we added a little more size. I'm still not happy with the backup center position. I think Day-Day could really make a big jump. A lot of people are against me with it. His rebounding analytics are insane. I don't know if that translates to, you know, to full-time, you know, role if Claxton gets hurt. But what if Claxton, I hate being the negative dude. What if Claxton gets hurt? Are you going to offer him a long-term deal if he's hurt? If he gets, let's say, God forbid, now I'm knocking all the wood on the world. If he has a, you know, a bad injury that he's out for 2 or 3 months, 4 months, are you going to offer him a max deal when other teams might? What are you going to do? That don't have a center then.
So my thing is with that, if in December or January you can re-sign him, do it. If that's a possibility, you do it. If he doesn't, that's where – even if he's hurt, I would say yes. And the only reason for it is injuries. Listen, man, injuries happen in this NBA,
that's what I'm NFL, saying.
Wherever it is. Injuries happen. And ACLs are probably the least of our worries nowadays, if I'm being honest. ACLs you come back from. Derrick Rose did it. He couldn't come back from it because the surgeries weren't as good. Now you see guys coming back from torn ACLs within 6 to 8 months, and they look better than when they did before. So I wouldn't be worried about that type of situation so much. My biggest situation with that would be if he does not want to re-sign with us when he's eligible because he wants to raise his value, say he does make an all-defensive team, that's where I would be worried, because then he's betting on himself. And I respect anybody that bets on themselves. I'm a sad Yankees fan. So seeing Judge do it, listen, you have to do what you have to do personally. But if it comes to a point where he's not in a price range that's going to work for us to acquire better players as well, then you definitely have to look to move him. Like, I mean, I'm just going off of a limb here, but like, say you were to at the deadline, you offer Spence, Finney Smith, Quax, and you know, maybe somebody else is like a salary filler for a Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen. Why wouldn't you want to do it? Right? You get your big man, you get your scorer. I know that Jared Allen's been a name that's also been mentioned over in Cleveland that could get moved. That situation is just not working for them. You got 2 6-1 guards who score at will and playmake but can't defend, and then you got 2 big men who can't really shoot. So it kind of hurts what they're doing over there. And they also were in very dire need of wing help last year. They did pick up Max Strus this year, so that was good for them. But I could definitely see at the trade deadline there could be potential for him to be moved. I know the Nets love him. I know that he loves it here, and I know that we love him. So I am expecting him to be back next year. But, you know, we're focused on this upcoming season right now, so we got to kind of play it by ear with that. But like I said, if there is a way to re-sign him, do it immediately. Injured or not, give him it.
Absolutely. And I think your cap take there is absolutely crazy, only for the fact I don't think that they would take – I don't think Jared Allen and Donovan Mitchell would be in the same deal. I talked to Zach Weiss, one's a Cavs podcast, and anytime I even think of mentioning putting Jared Allen in the deal, he wants to kill me. I don't think you're that off with Donovan Mitchell, though. Let's take Jared Allen out of this. What would a Donovan Mitchell to the Nets deal look like to you?
Spence, Finney-Smith, either Cam Thomas or Derek Whitehead, plus 4 first-round picks. Well, 3 first-round picks, 3 first-round picks, 1 swap. I'm personally all in on him. I've been talking about him for months, pretty similar to the way that I've been talking about Anthony Simons. At the end of the day, we need a 2. And I think that those are two guys that you plug into this team and you are contenders. Not Anthony right off the first year because he's still a little bit younger, but I expect him to be an all-star this year. But when it comes to Mitchell, you know, this is a guy that averages 27 plus. He's efficient. He's clutch. I'm personally all in on him. I've been talking about him for months, pretty similar to the way that I've been talking about Anthony Simons. At the end of the day, we need a two. And I think that those are two guys that you plug into this team and you are contenders. Not Anthony right off the first year because he's still a little bit younger, but I expect him to be an all-star this year. But when it comes to Mitchell, you know, this is a guy that averages 27 plus. He's efficient. He's clutch. He is definitely the answer to what we need. And being from New York, I know that there was rumors for him. His wish list when he was originally asking out of Utah was the Knicks, the Nets, and Miami. Because Miami has missed out now on four stars, I expect Miami to be all in on Donovan Mitchell when the time comes. But I do believe that we have the better package, and I do believe that the package that we offer is ultimately going to be the one that's taken. I think Donovan Mitchell's a net within the next 6 to 12 months, and that's the one thing that I've been really holding on to the past couple of weeks, even couple of months. Donovan Mitchell is the perfect fit for what we need when it comes to a scoring aspect. And to top it off, we wouldn't have to get rid of Ben Simmons. So if you offer a deal of Spence, DFS, and then either one of those young guys or one of those little small $2 million salary fillers with those three first-round picks and a swap, I think that's something that is immediately done. And the bottom line is the Knicks can't get him, right? Honestly, as a Nets fan, I would actually hope that they try to, because if you pair him and Brunson together, you're not winning. You have two 6'1 guards that can't defend. It's just Cleveland 2.0. So personally, I wouldn't mind if he went to the Knicks because they're not going to win. But the biggest threat to Donovan Mitchell for us is Miami. Miami's culture is amazing. Everybody wants to be there. But he's a New York guy, and at the end of the day, Brooklyn was on that list when he originally asked out. I think that he is a guy that ends up in Brooklyn. That's probably the highest percentage player that I would put out there when it comes to a star aspect over the next 6 to 12 months that will be in Brooklyn.
I could see a Donovan Mitchell move being made, but with the deal that Cleveland made, you don't think they want to have at least one more go around with that team that they have right now?
Really hoping around the trade deadline time frame that they're in like the sixth seed, because personally, I want Donovan Mitchell more than air. So I'm really hoping that we find a way to get him. And honestly, the thing is if there's no future for him there, why continue to waste your time? If I had to say one player that I will sit here confidently right now and say will be a net, it's Donovan Mitchell.
That's a pretty big take. I got one last question. Over or under 37 and a half games?
That's tough, too. You got that off of FanDuel, didn't you?
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's the same odds everywhere.
I'm going to say under. I'm going to say 37 games flat.
I said the same thing. I said under. Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a team that, I mean, we were, what, 2-3 games under 500 after the KD Kyrie trade? Yeah. We have a tough opening schedule.
It wasn't pretty, though.
Yeah, the first 10 games of the season, we could potentially be 2-8. This is a rough first 10 games of the season that we have, and it's going to make or break a lot of what we have going for us.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. Training camp coming up. A lot of Nets basketball coming up. I want to thank Dylan again for coming through. You got anything you want to promote? Any plugs?
Hey, listen, I'm not a big Twitter user. I literally jumped on there last year because I was like, I just need to keep up with the news. So I actually hate Twitter, so don't even bother. Feel free to give me a follow on Instagram at NetsPress. And if you haven't already, check out the podcast on YouTube, Nets Press Experience.
With Spencer Dinwiddie.
With Spencer Dinwiddie, yes. So feel free to take a look. Drop a follow over on Instagram. We are on the grind to 20K. And I'm really looking forward to this upcoming season. So I appreciate you for having me on. Hopefully we can do this again at some point. And yeah, man, I appreciate it.
At NetFansYouKnow on Twitter, on YouTube, at the only NetFansYouKnow on Instagram. Monday live show, Fireside Nets with Spen Harris. Have a great night. Have a great weekend. Whatever the hell you're doing. And let's go. We're out.